This We Love Telly podcast is a Mirror Digital production. Hello, I'm Rob Lee, and this week we're going to be talking British Soap Awards, Danny Minogue, and other bits and bobs. So let's just get on with it, shall we? So now we're here with the Sunday Mirror TV critic, Kevin O'Sullivan. Hello, Kevin.
Hi, Rob.
So all the hoo-ha this weekend has totally overshadowed the stablemate production of Britain's Got Talent, but it's that Danny Minogue won't be returning to the X Factor judging panel for the next series, despite mentoring last year's winner, Matt Cardle. Doesn't really matter, does it, Kevin? Cowell's the bigger on-screen loss, isn't he?
Well, I think Cowell is the biggest loss, obviously. That will be catastrophic for the X Factor. But I think Danny going is very important. I mean, I never thought she was that great a judge, but she was successful last year with Matt Cardle. And the fans of this show are very conservative with a small C.
Mm-hmm.
As we've seen with Britain's Got Talent, if you tamper with the judging panel, the audience doesn't like it. And already there are huge signals that they're very fed up about Danny going. So they're basically saying, no Simon, no Cheryl, no Danny, what the hell's going on? They're not happy.
I understand, and you're quite right with the Britain's Got Talent judging panel being fiddled around with, but what entertainment value has Danny ever brought beyond, like, a canny stylist? It's surely the X Factor machine that's made her. I mean, she's just the former home and away lesser Minogue, isn't it?
You're a big Danny fan, then. Well, I absolutely know where you're coming from there. As I say, my personal view was she never brought much to the party, but the fans liked her. She was part of an astonishingly successful show. What was it? 2-3 series that she did.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very successful. And they just won't like it that she's gone. They already don't like it. There is already a Twitter campaign and a Facebook campaign. Bring back Danny. What's going on? So she's become very significant because she's sort of almost symbolic of Simon Cowell hugely changing all of his programmes.
Well, what do you think about the heads up to her replacement? I mean, it could be argued in a way, just based on pure musical kudos and integrity, that Chalisa from N-Dubs has had more success than Danny in the music industry.
Yes, Chalisa's integrity is crucial to the equation, central. No, I mean, I think what's going on there, I think Chalisa's a good appointment. I think that what Cowell is thinking, I've got, you know, old, you know, ancient OAP Louis Walsh. I've got middle-aged 40-year-old Gary Barlow. I'm going to have to do something for the kids here. So in comes young Chalisa. They're also talking about Kelly Rowlands of Destiny's Child coming in as well. So she'll be the kind of expert on charts and singing and all that pop singing that Cowell likes. So, you know, once you start playing with chucking out judges, you have to think about who you're going to replace them with and whether or not it's going to make the dynamic right. And that's another reason why Danny, according to most ITV insiders, did not quit. She was fired because Cowell didn't want a middle-aged woman sitting next to a middle-aged man and an old man. He needed young people.
Well, that's how she got the gig after Sharon, in my opinion, obviously, but that's
it's a bit what goes around comes around, isn't it? You know, once she was brought in as the youthful replacement, now she's been youthfully replaced.
2-3 seasons, and she's finished. But I suppose this will all get forgotten after the first week, surely. I mean, and I suppose the X Factor machine would really kick in if Chalisa ends up with the Marks and Sparks ads instead.
I think so. Chalisa's actually doing very well. I mean, she's a good-looking girl. She's bright and intelligent. I think she's a really good appointment. But, as I say, trust me, there will be ructions ahead. Purely, even if the show is absolutely sensational and it's full of really, really amazing talent, which, by the way, is fairly unlikely, but if it is, the viewers at home still won't like it. I mean, they're mainly, as you said at the outset, they are seething over the absence of Simon Cowell, first in Britain's Got Talent, and now in the X Factor. Where's Uncle Simon? You know, a nation, you know, yearns, as it were. So,
X Factor be warned, Kevin O'Sullivan has spoken.
that's my. I have laid down the diktat now for the future of the X Factor. Now watch it unfold. No, honestly, it's going to be difficult times ahead. These are very turbulent times on Planet Cowl on both sides of the Atlantic, mm-hmm. and he knows it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure Steve Jones will sort that all out for him. But
he's the guy, yeah.
Heading on to The Apprentice, on Sunday you wrote about that it's got a rigidly fixed formula set in stone. We've seen it all before. The repetitive tasks and the indistinguishable wannabes blur into one. Is it worth watching anymore, Kevin?
Look, it depends. You see, for someone like myself, you know, who I am duty-bound, professionally bound to watch every single second of every single series, you know, for me, it's becoming slightly repetitive, mm-hmm. to say the least. You know, and I meant what I said in that quote that you just gave. You know, these, the wannabes this year, I mean, you know, you tell me the difference between them and any other year. You know, this program's sort of, it's pretty deceptive. I mean, when they make this announcement, Britain's entrepreneurial elite heads for London, and then you see 16 of the stupidest morons you've ever seen in your life, you know, making complete idiots of themselves. You think, well, hang on, what's going on here? But is it still worth watching? Yeah, I think it's still worth watching. I can understand it still gets a big audience, because even though we know it's all set up, it's all rigidly choreographed, it's carefully choreographed, it is funny. You know, they are humiliated in a very professional manner. But you know, when you hear these all the candidates, the contestants after the series, they all say to a man, well, you know, it just wasn't like that, but the way they edited it, you know, mm-hmm. it ended up being like that. Every time you tune into You're Fired to see, you know, the mm-hmm. biggest loudmouth boasting idiot you've ever seen on The Apprentice, you know, get his showdown with Dana O'Brien, they turn out to be fairly reasonable, benign people.
They still bloody said it at some point, though, didn't they?
Well, yeah, but why? Because the producers sat them down and said, would you say you're the greatest businessman who ever drew breath? They're trying to do what the producers want them to do, and they end up being hoisted by it, and they are humiliated on a national scale. It's quite funny. It's very funny sometimes, sublimely funny, but there's nothing new in all this, and we're not getting a very true picture of what really happens in this show.
Well, they're just going to have to roll with the punches, aren't they? That's the point.
Yeah, as they say, as Alex said. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your time, Kevin, and for all you Twitter people, you should follow Kevin at TVKev. That's at TVKEV, and that's Kevin O'Sullivan. Thank you very much for your time, Kevin.
Cheers, Rob.
Cheers. With me now is the only person who will readily admit to watching Eurovision all the way through. I'm having trouble saying Eurovision.
I'm only missing it because you're making me.
You're interrupting your own introduction. It's Sarah Wallace, We Love Telly Features writer. Hello, Sarah.
Hello,
Sarah. So, which act do you give 12 points?
I gave 12 points to Blue, obviously.
Blue.
While I was in my living room with my bunting. Mm-hmm. Getting excited about us finally winning Eurovision, but
sounds very nationalistic.
Yeah, you know, you've got to support them, haven't you? But they failed again.
Okay, you spoke to one of them, Duncan. That one, recently, I believe.
I spoke to that one just before the show, and
how long before the show?
You know, just before the show.
How just before the show?
Like 3 weeks just before the show.
That's not very before the show, is it? So you spoke to him at an indeterminate period of time,
yeah.
And?
He basically said he's very excited about it, and I know this country views Eurovision as being a bit crap.
They do.
They had a big chat about it. They knew that we would mock them, which we have done, for mm-hmm. taking part, but they didn't care because they said millions of people will watch it. It's one of the biggest musical events in the world. And they've
been quite open about his naked ambition there, then, really.
Yeah. He said, we don't even want to win. We just want to come top five. They didn't do that, sadly.
And was it worth the 3 minutes of your viewing time that they took up in your brain?
Oh, no.
But they can,
really.
Apparently. Blue can.
Blue can. Can.
What can
what
they?
What can they? We don't know yet. But they've stormed up the European download charts. So they're very excited about them.
Well, that's not
across
telly,
the
is
water.
It? So their song was I Can. Where did they finish?
They came 11th with 100 points.
They obviously can't then, can I?
Not really.
Can they? So what about who won?
Azerbaijan.
And what do you think about them?
They, you know, the song was okay. They're a bit rubbish. She's the girl who won is actually from North London. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Does that count as a win for us?
As a win for England or Britain or?
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, I suppose in the spirit of rampant nationalistic competition, I suppose it does count a little bit. But,
Jedward were on there as well. They were better than Blue, I would say.
Really? I mean, I saw a bit of Jedward. They were doing this weird kind of Betty Boo, hands behind their heads, jiggling.
Yeah.
Kind of a tribute to Adamant, I suppose, in their head. That's what they were going for. Really.
They're a bit of fun, aren't they? I don't think we've seen the last of them,
well,
unfortunately.
That's a shame, because the end of the item was the most redeeming feature performance. So, what can we look forward to watching this week? Sorry.
On tonight is Jamie Oliver is back. Love him or loathe him, he's back with his food revolution, mm-hmm. and he's gone to LA, where all the kids eat processed food at school, and he's determined to change their habits. When he arrives, he's told it's easier to get a gun, crack, or a prostitute in LA before you can get a tomato.
What was that? A gun, crack,
or a prostitute
instead of a tomato?
Yes, you won't be getting tomato soup from Jamie Oliver in LA.
So you presumably have crack on chips then, or
something like that.
That's rather disconcerting. So Jamie's back to save the world, is he?
Well, one of the kids out there thought that honey came from a bear. They eat chocolate brownies for breakfast. So if that's appealing,
what's wrong with eating chocolate brownies for breakfast?
What did you have for breakfast?
I actually had mashed potato for my breakfast.
For breakfast.
Today. That's because there's a lot of food left over from last night. But maybe Jamie Oliver needs to save my menu. That's good. Okay. So what's going to be your guilty viewing pleasure for the week?
Probably Dating in the Dark, which I don't usually watch. But Sarah Harding of Girls Aloud fame will be hosting it for the first time.
So it's on Living TV, isn't it, Dating in the Dark? So just to explain what it is for people who may not have seen it, because I've only seen it on
It's a dating show in pitch black. Uh-huh. So girls and boys are thrown into a darkened room and they have to get to know each other based on personality, not looks.
Well, up until the personality bit, it was just like being in a nightclub.
Yeah.
But they do get off with each other, don't they?
They do, and then the lights go on at the end and
And Sarah Harding's there.
Sarah Harding's there as a shoulder to cry on.
Oh, right. So she's not just watching or anything like that?
I think she probably is.
Okay.
It's a bit worrying.
That is worrying. And my guilty pleasure, and I don't want to talk about it too much, is watching, if you like, professional wrestling. Watch TNA Sacrifice on Challenge TV on Wednesday night at 10 p.m. I don't want to talk about it. I said I didn't want to talk about it. That's Channel 125. Sarah, I don't want to talk about it anymore, but thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Joining us now is Tony Stewart, the Wheel of Telly editor and soaps columnist. Tony, how's the hangover after the British Soap Awards on Saturday?
Well, it's just about gone now, thank you.
And that was in Manchester, of course, and it's being screened tomorrow night at 8 o'clock on ITV1. You're obviously a judge on the panel, Tony. How did the people you vote for go? How many predictions did you get? What was your tally?
Okay, out of 15 awards that were either voted for by the public or the panel, I got 10 correct.
Two-thirds, that's not too bad.
I was quite chuffed with that. There was a few that I sort of just edged away from, not least of all Villain of the Year, when I did think somebody would win it. But I said somebody else at the time.
Right, okay. So were there any major... Well, there obviously must have been some surprises, otherwise we might have to adjust your title of soap expert. But what were the major surprises for you?
I suppose that I'd predicted this, actually. I thought he might win Best Actor, but it is still a surprise that Danny Miller, who plays Aaron, gay Aaron, in Emmerdale, actually got the public vote. Mm-hmm. And for him to beat Shame Ritchie and Chris Gascoigne. Shame Ritchie obviously plays Alfie in EastEnders, and Chris Gascoigne plays Peter Barlow in Coronation Street, and to get a public vote like that is like an incredible achievement for Danny, and mm-hmm. I was so delighted I let out a whoop when it was announced.
Whoop whoop. But it wasn't all whoops, was it? It was an added poignancy to Danny Miller winning as well.
Yeah, there was, because there was a special achievement award which goes to Gavin Blythe, who unfortunately died at the end of last year after a very short illness, and he was only 41, and he was the architect of Emmerdale's renaissance. Danny Miller said on stage that he regarded Gavin as like a second father to him, and certainly Gavin had championed him, so much so that at last year's awards, Gavin had had somewhat of a go at me as a panel member for not voting for more Emmerdale stuff, because I don't think they won anything. And Gavin's wife accepted the award on his behalf, and her first line was, "I told Gavin we'd win some awards this year." So it was quite good. But Danny's speech was incredibly moving. And there was a lot of people in the audience that were actually, you know, touched by it.
And I believe there was another touching moment when it came to the Lifetime Achievement Award.
The Lifetime Achievement Award went to Bill Tarmey. Of course, all this has been in the press, so I'm not really revealing anything, mm-hmm. even though the show will be broadcast tomorrow
night.
We'll
ask you for more secrets in just a moment,
Tony. It's worth people tuning in to see how the whole thing was done, particularly Bill Tarmey's. How Bill Tarmey's award was given to him, which is a surprise because he's not very well either at the moment. But Jack Duckworth was one of the most popular characters in soap ever, and he also won Best Exit for When He Died. That's when Jack died, mm-hmm. not Bill. I don't want to say anything horrible like that.
Predictive. Wouldn't be quite a surprise otherwise.
Yeah, but when Jack died last year, it was a particularly moving episode when the ghost of Vera came to dance him away to the great soap land in the sky.
Mm-hmm. So, obviously, it was a big year for Corrie last year. As you say, Jack Duckworth passed on, and it was the 50th year, and there was the live episode. So they were a shoo-in for best soap, surely.
I thought that, a lot of people thought that, but they didn't win it. They won 9 awards, but they didn't win the ultimate award, which is Best Soap. That went to EastEnders. Mm-hmm. Give credit where credit's due. EastEnders has also been on fire this year, and it won Best Soap last year in their 25th anniversary year. And for... I think it is really how the public vote. They vote online, you see. They do vote in publications, etc., etc. But because it's such an online activity, from what I can gather, it was such a close vote that they had recounts and that sort of thing. But the EastEnders fans are much more savvy to online voting, and so too are the Hollyoaks fans.
Why do you say that? Why EastEnders fans? Are they a younger demographic?
There's a younger demographic, yeah. Right.
But is it a case then, possibly, that there's been a raising of standards across all soaps completely? If the best actors in from Emmerdale, Danny Miller, and then Corrie had such a strong year, and EastEnders had an even stronger year, is that possible?
Yeah, well, they did. I mean, obviously... The one award that I'd like to have seen EastEnders win was Best Storyline for The Baby Swap, because then it would have vindicated what they did when there was such an outcry at the beginning of the year, you know, when people... There was a certain hostility from people who are not necessarily EastEnders viewers or soap viewers come to that. And that's how Shane Ritchie thought about it as well, because I talked to him at the ceremony, and he felt that there were certain people that were hostile to EastEnders that had kind of ganged up on them over the Baby Swap story. Mm-hmm. So to win that award would have been a great vindication. But they won Best Soap, and I think a lot of people say that that is proof that EastEnders didn't really offend that many people as was claimed at the time. There's a huge furore over it.
So a little bit of a surprise, really, a result for Best Soap. And are there any surprise endings to the show tomorrow night, or can you not tell us?
There is a surprise ending. I can give you a few hints. But one of the other big surprises, of course, was Emmett Scanlon from Hollyoaks, who won 2 awards. He plays the villain Brendan Brady.
Who has that poor moustache, of course.
Yeah, so you say. But he won a public vote for Villain of the Year against Kate Ford, who plays Toxic Tracy, mm-hmm. in Corrie, and also against Charlie Brooks, who plays the malicious Janine in EastEnders. So that's fantastic credit to Emmett, because he's a brilliant actor. And also, he won Best Newcomer, which is a panel vote which we bestowed on him, really. So that was the other shock, I suppose. But there is a huge surprise right at the end when... Philip Schofield announces, well, sorry, Jesse Metcalf actually announces who's won Best Soap, and all the cast of EastEnders come on with a guest.
Okay.
And that's a surprise.
Right.
From another soap, and he's a very tall person, so he should be quite prominent in the pictures on TV tomorrow night.
Okay, that's fascinating. Well, we shall just have to wait. You can tell me off air in a minute, though, can't you? Yeah, obviously.
Of course, I'll tell you.
Brilliant. Off-air. Well, thank you for joining us again this week, Tony. We'll see you again next week.
Okay, Rob. Thanks a lot.
And now to send you all on your way home, or just kind of, you know, signal it's time to pull the earplugs out of your ears. It's a little quiz thing where you can win some stuff. So we're going to play, like last week, we played a theme tune which was going backwards, and we asked you to correctly identify which it was, and it was Minder. I don't know if you listened, but it was very funny indeed. Anyway, there's another one. I'm not going to tell you which one this is. What you've got to do is you've got to tweet us the answer to at We Love Telly. That's all one word, at We Love Telly, WELOVETELLY, and you've got to let us know what you think it is, and we'll give you some stuff. Okay, here it is. So that sounded very scary, but a little bit jumpier than last week. So that Twitter address is at We Love Telly. Thank you very much for listening. Join us again next week, please. Thank you.